Everyone, it's November 2016, and thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 25 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by our resident film reviewer, Dr. John McAteer, and today we are talking about the new sci-fi film, The Arrival, directed by Denis Villeneuve and starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. Our reviewer, John McAteer, is an assistant professor and chair of the online liberal arts program at Ashford University. He has a BA in film from Biola University, AMA in philosophy of religion and ethics from Talbot School of Theology, and a PhD in philosophy from the University of California at Riverside. In the current volume 39, number 5 issue of the Christian Research Journal, John has written our cover story called Suicide Squad, Deadpool, and the Rise of the Comic Book Antihero. John has also written a film review on The Arrival called Reading a Sci-Fi Pro-Life Theodicy in The Arrival, which is available free online at Quip.org. John, it's good to have you on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about Arrival. I loved this movie. Thanks for having me.
I, too, enjoyed this movie quite a bit, and I don't know that it was what I expected it would be, but it was very thought-provoking. So as a science fiction movie, Arrival is based on theoretical ideas from real-life linguistics. So what's the sci-fi premise of The Arrival?
Well, I feel like we should say first that there's really no way to talk about this movie without spoilers. So your listeners should like stop the podcast, run out and watch the movie, and then come back, because I think it's definitely worth watching. And you know, I'm gonna have to spoil it a little bit. But you know, Arrival is sort of an alien invasion type movie, but that doesn't necessarily make it science fiction, right? If you think about, you know, Star Wars, there's aliens in Star Wars, but there's no actual science in Star Wars. So it's like a true science fiction movie has a basis in real science, I would say. So in the background of Arrival, there's some problems in quantum physics about the flow of time. So it turns out it's really hard for physicists to explain why time only goes in one direction, right? We all know we can only act in the future, we can't change the past, but mathematically it's really hard to explain that. You know, I don't really understand all of the physics, but the idea is of the film in Arrival is that maybe time can go the other way, but it's only our brains that we can only think forward, and the reason maybe we can only think forward has to do with the way that our language works, because you know, human language is spoken in time, and the ordering of the words, you know, you have to say them in a certain order. And so we're kind of conditioned by our speech to be able to only think in kind of beginning, middle, and an end kind of thinking. So the movie really focuses on that kind of linguistics aspect of science. And there's this idea in linguistics called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is that the structure of your language determines how you think and how you experience the world. So like I said, in the movie, that's because language happens in time. So the hypothesis is, well, maybe we experience time the way we do because of our language. And in real life, right, that's probably, you know, an extrapolation and exaggeration. That's not really what Sapir-Whorf is talking about, but it's kind of a fun way to take a real life idea and apply it to this fictional context.
I think it was interesting in the film, and I agree with you. I mean, I feel like everyone should see this film. There's so much that you could think about and talk about. As a matter of fact, it's one of those films you should see with someone else, because after you're done, you want to talk about it. But the main character is a linguist, and I never thought a movie about a linguist could be exciting, but it is. And so what does the film made me really think about the nature of language and communication and understanding who we are. How does the film address that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot about, you know, communication, about the ambiguity of language. Really, I think that really kind of comes through in the kind of political dimension of this film, I think, is largely about this idea of communication and ambiguity. There are questions about, say, when they're translating the aliens' language, you know, and they say this line once, which some people interpret as, you know, when they ask them, why are you here? And some people say, well, what the alien said was, we're here to use a weapon. And so everybody kind of gets freaked out, like, oh, no, they're here to kill us because they're here to use a weapon. And but there's the linguist in the story says, you know, her name is Louise. Louise says, well, no, a better translation is not use weapon, it's offer tool. So there's that, and you can see how maybe those were different translations of the same thing. And then this comes out, another good example of this, when Louise is talking about the Sanskrit word for war, and she says, you know, a lot of people translate this word to mean an argument. Like, what's the kind of a literal translation of this word? We think it probably means war, but literally maybe it means argument, like a disagreement about ideas. And Louise says, no, that's not the best translation. The best translation of this word for war is desire for more cows, she said, right? So I think what's going on there is she's saying, instead of thinking about, you know, war as a disagreement about ideas, it's not about ideology, it's about economics, the desire for more cows. So that, if you think about it, would really shift the way you entered into diplomacy and trying to prevent wars, depending on how you interpret what the real motivation of this is. But that comes down to understanding what the other person is saying to you and kind of getting in their head in a way. So I think a lot of the film is kind of asking us to think about things from other people's perspectives, to kind of get different perspectives on things and think about how that might change the way that we relate to them.
I know that reviewers have praised the movie's emotional resonance, you know, with the characters, the different things going on. So what's the human dimension of this story? Although I think there's more than just a human dimension. There's an obvious one, but there's aliens involved. So what's, I would say, more of the emotional dimension of the story?
Right. I mean, yeah, like I said, there's this whole scientific dimension, and then I talked about the politics, and we'll probably talk about theology later, but there's really the movie has this human dimension in the sense of emotional resonance, like you said. The story is framed around Louise, the main character, the linguist. It's framed around her relationship with her daughter. You know, it starts off with her talking kind of to her daughter and saying, you know, I always used to think this was the beginning of your story, but now I'm starting to think that, you know, the idea of a beginning to a story doesn't make sense, and I'm thinking about stories in different ways. And then at the end, it comes back to that same scene with her talking to her daughter, and we realize this is right when she's about to conceive her daughter. That's why it's the beginning of the story, right? She's going to go with her husband to try to make a baby. And so the story has this kind of circular structure, just like the alien's language, right? It begins and ends in the same place, but you experience, at the ending, you're able to put together all of these pieces in a new way. Like her story of her daughter unfolds very gradually in the film. You realize her daughter has had this incurable disease and has died, and, you know, Louise is dealing with grief, but then at the end, when you see how all of the pieces fit together, I think it's really, really moving. It's not just you know, tragic; it's just very beautiful, I think.
I think the construction of the film also kind of speaks to some of the themes, because when I was watching it, I assumed I was at a specific starting point. When it took me till the end of the film to realize that's not where these things didn't happen after something else had happened. So that was kind of interesting to even think of how they did that. And you had to think back to how the film even began. When you state in your film title, the review that you did for us, that the film is pro-life, how would you describe that this film is pro-life?
Yeah, I think the story, like I said, at the end, you can... she's about to conceive her daughter, right? To go and make a baby. That's how the movie ends. But by at this point, she understands that her daughter is going to die, right? Because her relationship to time has changed, and she's able to basically kind of remember the future, is the way they put it in the story. And so she knows that her daughter is going to die. She knows her daughter is going to have this incurable disease. But she chooses to conceive her daughter anyway, right? Instead of saying, "Well, you know, I don't want to have a daughter. I don't want to put her through that. I don't want to create this human being that's just going to suffer and die." In a way, I mean, she has the ability to choose not to have her baby once she realizes her baby is going to die, which would be in effect to abort her daughter, right? Symbolically, to just choose not to conceive her. Would have the effect of taking this human being who is going to exist and make her not exist. And that's the way a lot of people today will relate to their babies. You know, they'll have prenatal testing, for example, to find out if the baby is going to have some kind of disease or whatever, and then choose to abort the child when they tests come back positive. But in this film, it really affirms the idea that even though we know that this child is going to suffer, the child's life is so valuable and so beautiful and so worthwhile, despite all of that suffering, that the mother chooses to have the baby anyway. So I think I took that to be a very strong pro-life message.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is John McAteer, and in the current volume 39, number 5 issue of the Christian Research Journal, John has written our cover story called Suicide Squad, Deadpool, and the Rise of the Comic Book Antihero. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. Also visit equip.org to read John's film review of the film The Arrival, and it's titled Reading a Sci-Fi Pro-Life Theodicy in Arrival, which is available free online at equip.org. Well, one thing we mentioned at the beginning of this podcast is that this film is based on a short story by Ted Chiang called The Story of Your Life. And I know I was watching a recent lecture he gave this summer, and that short story collection, because of the film, is now back in print, so that you can track that down online probably. Does the story have the same premise, his short story, as the film? And how does reading the story change the way we understand the movie? Because that's always a big issue. I know as an avid reader, I'm always wondering, well, how will this movie be like the Lord of the Rings book or The Hobbit or Harry Potter or whatever it is, that you're always trying to compare the original source material with the film interpretation?
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, it's when a movie is based on a story or a book, you should take the movie on its own terms and not assume that it's a bad movie just because it differs from the book. And actually, I saw an interview with Ted Chiang where he said the same thing. So even the authors of books understand that a book or a story is one thing and a movie is something else. They work very differently, and sometimes even to have the same effect on the audience, you have to change a lot of things just because of the way the medium differs. But when you're trying to take a movie on its own terms, that requires trying to understand what the movie is doing. And I think it sometimes can be helpful to compare the original book and the movie, just so you can sort of see the interpretive choices that the filmmakers made and how they changed the emphasis and things, because that, you know, changes the meaning of the story, and it can get you some little bit of insight into not, you know, why the movie is bad because it's different, but just what the movie is trying to do, and how that's reflected in the differences. So, in this case in particular, I would say the basic premise is the same. The book, the movie does kind of simplify a lot of things, especially in regards to, you know, there's the two main characters, the linguist and the physicist. And the movie really focuses on the linguist and kind of diminishes the role of the physicist. In the book, they're more kind of equal. It kind of gives both perspectives. There's a lot more physics in the book. But I think probably it was just too complicated to explain that stuff to the audience, and it just simplifies to focus on one character. And then the other big change was the movie added this whole military angle, right, when the aliens come and all the governments show up, and, you know, the military goes, and we think, you know, the aliens are going to attack us. Partly that's, I think, and none of that is in the book. There isn't any of this military element to the book. I think partly what the movie is doing is it's trying to increase kind of a sense of urgency and suspense, right? It creates a kind of level of danger that's not in the book. And also it kind of fits into the whole kind of tradition of movies about alien invasions. This is what we expect. And then the movie can kind of take our expectations for that this is going to be kind of a Independence Day sort of battle with the aliens, and it twists that around and does something different. Without that kind of military element and that suspense, one of the changes that comes out from that is that the movie really makes it seem like Louise is able to change the past. There's a scene where she talks to the Chinese military general, and she talks to him in the future somehow. She's able to, because of the way her mind has expanded from learning this alien language, and she's able to see the past, present, and future sort of all at once. She, in the present, is able to kind of project her memory into the future and remember this way that she's talking to the Chinese general, and then take information she learns from him in the future to the present to change his present behavior. So it gets really complicated when you're thinking about the timelines and time travel and things, and whether she really does change anything or whether this all was, you know, sort of destined to happen this way. You really get the sense, whether, you know, or not it was literally set up this way, you get the sense that she's actually changing things, that this information she gets from the future is able to make a difference in the present. And because there's that sense of, you know, her present position being able to make a choice that affects the future, that changes the story with her daughter, right? Because that daughter story is the central story. So she, in the book, the daughter dies, but the daughter dies due to a rock climbing accident. So it's a completely kind of preventable sort of accident. If Louise could affect the present due to her knowledge of the future, she would just tell her daughter, don't go rock climbing today, you're going to die. But in the book, in the movie, they've changed the death to this incurable disease. So they're really, the only thing Louise could do to prevent it is just not to have the baby. It's not a disease that can be cured. And so I think that's where you get this pro-life message, right? By the change from the rock climbing accident to this incurable disease, it puts it in that context of you know, prenatal testing and things like that, whether or not the filmmakers intended it, right? I don't know that they intended it to be a pro-life message, but it doesn't really matter because the way that they changed the story gives it that meaning, which I think is interesting for us as Christians to take that into our dialogues with others.
I know in the story, and I don't know if you felt like in the film that the filmmaker really explored the whole idea of free will, because we're talking about choices. And another thing, because hopefully you're listening to this podcast and you've already seen the movie, so it's not that her daughter is a little infant when she dies. She's a full-grown woman. I mean, it seems like she's a college student or older than that when she dies of this disease. And so just this idea of choices, you know, if we knew what was going to happen, should we make different choices, not just also in the pro-life sense, but does that, you know, is that really a free will choice if we know those things are going to happen and we didn't try to prevent something? What is considered a good thing or a bad thing to prevent, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the book assumes that you can't change anything about the past or the present. All you can do is sort of change your acceptance of this. It really puts it in the context of something like, you know, Buddhism or even Nietzsche's philosophy of, he has this idea of amor fati, which is the love of fate. And so Nietzsche thinks everything is predestined, it's fate, but that your job is to kind of accept it and love your fate and love who you are, right? Because if you changed anything about the past, you can't change it, but if you did, it would make you a different person now. So if there is anything about the past you wish you could change, what you're saying is you don't like the person you are now. But he says what you should be doing is trying to become the kind of person that you are glad to be. So take those things about the past you wish you could change and learn from them and move forward in a kind of healthy way rather than feeling depressed about it and complaining and wanting to change it. So that's kind of Nietzsche's view, and maybe something like that going on in this film. But in the story, in the film, it really depends on how you interpret that Chinese general scene. But I really get the sense, and maybe I need to watch the film again. But it really seems like she is gaining information from this Chinese general that changes the direction of her choice. And so it seems to have a more of a free will bent than the book. But either way, whether we're talking about the book or the film, I think there is this, it's more predetermined than we normally think. It has a kind of a predestination sort of feel to it. So I think it's a kind of compatibilism, maybe, if your readers or listeners know about the idea of compatibilism and the way predestination is supposed to be compatible with free will. So it's kind of a Calvinist idea that I think you could explore in more depth with this.
Well, one of the things that I think the film made me think about was the whole issue of answering the problem of evil and of suffering, especially if you think of the suffering that she and her husband would feel because they react to the news of, you know, they were both involved in this alien language translation and then they end up, you know, falling in love, get married, and then how they react to their daughter's situation. So how does the movie, do you think, separate from the short story, deal with the questions of suffering and the problem of evil?
So for me, you know, I usually think about this in terms of narrative, right? A narrative is like a set of events that's structured to have a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? A story. And like I said, the very first scene of Arrival starts off with this discussion of stories, of life stories in particular, and how, you know, Louise describes how, you know, we normally think of stories as having beginning, middles, and ends, but that she, her new perspective has shifted that to thinking of your life as a collection of moments instead of necessarily a story. And I think the reason that's the movie's answer to the problem of evil. So we should think about, okay, how is that an answer to the problem of evil? In the if you think about a narrative, the meaning of a narrative has to do with the way that the story ends, right? The classic example of this is The Sixth Sense, right? You think you're watching one movie until you get to the ending, and then you realize you have to reinterpret everything that happened before that, right? So the ending is the most important for the meaning of a story, which is one, so if you're thinking about tragedy, when a person who, the story ends badly for the person and they suffer and die, that can lead us to change our interpretation of that person's life. We think, wow, that person's life was tragic. It was their suffering was meaningless because they weren't able to grow through it, and they just died and whatever. That's one reason why Christian theologians throughout history have tended to be suspicious of tragedy, like in the Greek tragedies, where tragedy was kind of predetermined. It was their fate to suffer, and then when they were destroyed, that was the end. Christians have thought, well, you know, stories don't end with the death, right? When you die, then there's the afterlife. And for a Christian, right, when you die and you go to heaven and you're united with God, and God can bring goodness out of everything, including your seemingly useless suffering of your life. No story is ultimately tragic, right? If you see it in this bigger context, because your life, God can always bring goodness out of those apparent tragedies. But this movie is offering us a different kind of response. I mean, one thing you might worry about that idea of the typical Christian response of saying, if you see the story in the bigger context, with this, where the ending is, you know, the second coming of Christ and God's kingdom come, in that context, you know, all suffering is made good. What you might worry is that it doesn't take suffering seriously enough. It's saying that these, if God brings goodness out of it, maybe that means the suffering itself was good. But I would say, whatever our answer to the problem of evil, we have to take evil seriously. We have to say it is not good, it is evil. And that even if God brings good out of it, that doesn't invalidate the evilness of the suffering itself. And so this movie, I think, tries to balance that a little bit by saying, rather than seeing a life story, seeing your life as a story with a beginning, middle, and end, and then interpreting the meaning of the whole based on only that ending, only that suffering of the ending, what if you saw your life as a series of moments, as a series of various things that happened, some good and some bad, and recognize that even though the bad things are bad, there are still good things that happen too. And whether the last thing that happens to you is bad doesn't invalidate all of the good things that happen, and that you can sort of seen from this perspective of eternity, so to speak, where you're seeing your life as a whole, every life is valuable. Every life is made in the image of God. Even those who ultimately, suffer and are, reject God at the end of their lives, which is a kind of tragedy, but that doesn't mean that their life was not worth living. Their life still gives glory to God in some sense, because God has given them beautiful moments in the midst of that that ultimately tragic story.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for John. So, John, ham or turkey for your Christmas dinner?
I prefer ham, but we always eat turkey.
And speaking of Christmas, it's coming up. So what's something on your Christmas gift wish list?
I'm just wishing for a few days off and some rest.
And the Grand Budapest Hotel or the Royal Tenenbaums?
I think Grand Budapest Hotel.
And what book are you reading right now?
Right now, I just started the Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, a story about the sort of African-American experience today. So that'll be interesting.
Well, thanks, John, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
All right. Thank you.
In the current volume 39, number 5 issue of the Christian Research Journal, John has written our cover story called Suicide Squad, Deadpool, and the Rise of the Comic Book Antihero. To read his article, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. John has also written a film review on the film we talked about today, The Arrival, called Reading a Sci-Fi Pro-Life Theodicy in Arrival, which is available free online at equip.org. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Men broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you go to equip.org, where you can download our free smartphone app, on which you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live, listen to previous broadcasts, make a donation, and subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. The holidays are coming up, so please consider giving gift subscriptions to the Christian Research Journal. So until our next author conversation, thanks so much for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.